Esta conferencia está siendo grabada.
Okay, recording has started. Thank you.
Great, thanks everyone for joining. I'm not sure I'm the right one to be leading this call, but I'm certainly happy to facilitate it in a way that helps us along. I think the purpose of this group. So first of all, I want to describe what I think the purpose of this group is, and then make sure we all have that straight. So I see this as being a sort of bifurcated analysis, and that is, first making a determination, or at least a proposal that, or whether a joint controller situation exists or not, and if it does, who are the parties, and if not, who are the controllers and who are the processors. So making that determination, and then the second is then the implementation issues or difficulties that spring from those determinations. So as we've discussed in the past, implementation of a joint controller situation is difficult or maybe even problematic. But I think that we really can't let that affect the determination of whether a joint controller situation exists or not. I think we should make that legal determination first, and then attack the implementation issues. So that seems to be the order of the conversation to me. And I really want this to be a conversation. And so please raise your hands at any time, and so we can get the conversation rolling. But with that, I would turn to maybe, I'm not sure what the best way to run this is. I know Thomas, Diane, Dan have been leaders in this discussion so far, but I think we really have the best people on the team on the call, and I'm happy with that. So I wonder if we start with, do we start with definitions and describe, that sort of apply to the definitions in the GDPR that apply to our situation, and then attempt to get agreement on that. I'm not sure the best way forward. I don't know if either Dan or Diane or Thomas can start that discussion, or anyone.
Hi, Kurt. Could you hear me?
Yes, I can. Thanks.
Yes, I can.
Okay, great. You sound like you have a cold. I'm really sorry.
You and me both.
So, yeah, I think that it's a really great that we're having this conference. It's all to be able to come together on how we see the relationship between, from a legal standpoint, between ICANN, the contracted parties, and the data subject. And when Alan, Dan, and I had the opportune time to speak at IAPP, we started the conversation saying that we wanted to certainly start with the definitions to have a good grounding in where we think the responsibilities lie and if they are in fact a joint controller construct. So I think that that's really a good starting point. Based upon the notes that we have here, we see that there is a certain perspective that the work that we've done to date in the EPDP does support a joint controller relationship, in that there is overlapping responsibilities and there's overlapping decision-making capabilities that are going on between the parties, and that in fact is under the GDPR, under the relevant article, a definition that could support a joint controllership agreement that would then proportionately allow for the breakdowns of responsibilities and liabilities. So I think that that's certainly a good starting point, and I know that Thomas is anxious to jump in and also add to that, but and then Dan could share his perspectives, and I think that that's a great place to start. So, Thomas, do you want to step into this definitional component?
No, I think this is just an accumulation of definitions that we found to allow for the reader of the report to understand what the catalog of choices is that GDPR offers. So I don't have anything substantial to say to that. The reason that I raised my hand is that I think probably the best use of our time would be to discuss what potential alternatives there are. I think we've been clear that, the joint controller situation is the one that some on our team think is most appropriate to pick. It might not be the only solution, but at least as far as I'm concerned, the only solution that I think is plausible and defendable. So if we want to change direction between our initial report and the final report, we would really need to understand what we can do differently on what basis. So I think, this is an opportunity for us. I'm sorry. As a team to look at potentially alternative scenarios and discuss those. And I think we should be cognizant of difficulties at the operational level, but operational hurdles or difficulties should not be the deciding factor in us picking a legal model, but we need to pick a legal model which we think is compliant and then try to find a way to operationalize things. So I guess that's my initial point I wanted to make.
Okay, so Dan, why don't you jump in, because I could see that that Thomas feels that, and I understand his perspective, that basically the joint controllership has been well defined by certain people in the group, him, myself, and that we believe that this ship is the most appropriate and legally defensible, and there are certain other people in the group that think there could be alternative situations, and that perhaps we should vet those to be able to make sure that we fully understand the different perspectives. And certainly hearing from you is highly important. So go right ahead.
Thank you, Diane. Thanks, Thomas, and thanks, Kurt, too. I think this is kind of a interesting conversation, because I think I agree with everything everybody said. I want to be a little careful, because it's just 6 a.m. and it's a Monday morning here, and I've also got that cold, sounds like Kurt has. So I'm not firing at 100% quite yet, but I think we're all on the same page about the task in front of us, which is to go back and take a deeper look at this joint controllership question. I agree with Kurt, it's a good idea to start sort of with definition, so we're all speaking the same language. And that's kind of how we started the memo that we had circulated just before the initial report came out, November 15th. And that was the first section of them, those kind of definitions: controller, processor, joint controllers, and then independent controllers, which I think is, we tried to lay out in a few paragraphs there, and was kind of a concept that I don't think people had talked through. My impression
el
was...
El anfitrión ha abandonado la conferencia para hablar con el centro de asistencia para conferencias y regresará en breve.
Thank you, operator. Muchas gracias. I think, I'm on the same page with you guys. We need to sort through, if we do have a joint controllership here, I think we all agree that a legal decision is going to have to be, made. And I understand, the initial report presents the case that ICANN and the contracting parties, have a joint controllership and should enter, I think in the initial report it says ICANN is there a joint controller agreement? And I think through discussion, we've translated that to mean, at least some people think that means that there, we don't really have a joint controllership. We have over 1,000 different joint controllerships in the GTLD space, and that each registry, should have its own joint controllership agreement. So I really think, agreed to, we need to talk through, the two separate issues. One, do we have a joint controllership? Is that the appropriate way to understand the GTLD space, the registries and registrars and ICANN, and then also considering all the other players in the space that kind of go beyond that, resellers, escrow agents, it goes on, data dispute resolution providers, CDPS, who is users, I think we need to talk about. Do we need to kind of define the limits of this joint controllership, if it exists, and then really think through how it would be implemented. And we raised questions in that memo, and we raised them earlier, such as how exactly would ICANN board go about negotiating all those agreements, or could we come up with a template? I'm kind of rattling around just through the outline of our previous discussions. And then thinking through, too, the initial report talks about entering a joint controller agreement. We all understand that this kind of, separate document, but the Article 26, if I recall correctly, actually talks about a joint controller arrangement. And I think raised the question before the initial report break, let's call it. Is there a different way to look at the arrangement, and might it be possible to basically evolve our current arrangements into an arrangement that someone would say complies with the Article 26 requirements, the GDPR requirements, possibly by making amendments to all our existing agreements between these parties. We have, the registry agreement, the registrar accreditation agreement, the registrar agreements, and could those be evolved or supplemented with provisions and obligations that might make the whole thing compliant if we agree, and if we're, we think that data processing authorities or courts would ultimately agree that this is joint controllership, do we need a separate new negotiated agreement separately with each registry, or is it possible to make changes, might be small, might be big, to the agreements, to the existing agreements, to make them compliant? I agree 100% with what Thomas said, which is, we shouldn't let the difficulty of implementing whichever scenario we decide is appropriate. There's going to be work to be done, and we shouldn't let that scare us or steer us one way or the other. We have to look at it with open eyes, decide is there a joint controllership or not, and then plunge into the work together to figure out how to get it compliant with GDPR, because that's, I think, what everyone on the call wants is for all the parties in the space to be in compliance with GDPR. Thanks for that.
Thanks, Dan. Go ahead, Alan.
Thank you very much. So Alan was for the record. So just pick up on one or two things that Dan said there. Well, first things first, obviously, I think we're all agreed that regardless of what is chosen at the end of the day, it is going to be a mountain of work. No matter what one we choose, there is going to have to be an awful lot of work done. And there is going to, this is the requirement of the law. There's no getting around it. We need to put in the proper legal contracts, agreements, etc., in place. So, whatever is going to be necessary is going to be necessary, and we need to stop, I think, thinking about this as an exercise in how difficult the level of implementation is, because it is going to be a difficult implementation, and it will take an awful lot of discussion and an awful lot of work between us. So I agree what you're talking about, and I know it's difficult on the ground of implementation, but it is going to be a nightmare. Let's just be 100% honest on that. I just want to go back to your point as well about this whole the joint controller arrangement. Again, specifically, so speaking from my point of view, because Donuts would have, say, its office in Ireland, where I am currently sitting, our lead DPA would be the Irish Data Protection Authority. So then I would have to look to things such as the Data Protection Act of 2018 in Ireland, which specifically goes down and digs down deeper and adds another layer, as it is under the good old principles of subsidiarity, saying that, I'll just read it out here. It's actually Section 79, that where two or more controllers jointly determine the purposes and means of the processing of personal data, they shall determine their respective responsibilities for compliance, in a transparent manner by means of an agreement in writing between them. So specifically for my DPA, they would require a an agreement in writing, not necessarily an arrangement that we can be morphed into something. So again, you have to look at, you know, how is it being implemented with extra levels as well in certain constituencies, jurisdictions is the word I'm looking for. So specifically, if Ireland, who has always seemed to be somewhat middle of the road, going to conservative, you know, you can be guaranteed that there will be mirrored requirements within other European jurisdictions that will require that as well. And I'm sure Thomas probably knows of more, but that's the one that, you know, comes straight to mind because it's directly applicable to me here. So, the one question I would ask as well, I mean, you don't seem to be necessarily against the idea, this is directly to that as well. You don't seem to be necessarily against the idea of a JCA. I mean, I think you're very open to it. It's just a matter of making sure that it is the right and best choice. So, I mean, can we just maybe just confirm that, you know, if we consider that this is the right choice, you are necessarily not against it 100%. I just want to be clear in that so that we know how to pitch this going forward. Thank you.
Hi, everyone. It's Julie from staff. Can I interject real quick and just ask who joined the call just a moment ago?
Hi, it's Christina. Apologies for joining late.
Thank you, Christina.
Thanks, Dennis. I don't know if you took your hand down or you have a response to Al.
Yes, I do. First, Alan, thanks for that. And I wonder, that was interesting. I wonder if you could please share, link. I didn't follow or take a note on exact reference. If you could share in the chat or email around that reference to how the Irish law interprets. It sounds like it's Article 26, but kind of the Irish version, and it talks about a written agreement, not just an arrangement. So maybe Article 26 is a little more general. It says the parties shall have an arrangement, looking at it in a transparent manner, but doesn't say a written agreement. I wonder, though, we do have written agreements. ICANN and Donuts already have, you know, whatever it is, a lot of written agreements between us. And then Donuts and with its registrars also has written agreements, I would argue. Or is this something different that someone's going to want to walk into an office and see a piece of paper with blue ink on that paper, and that's a written agreement? So I'd be curious too, and that's maybe a question about, no expert at all in Irish law or whatever other local laws we have to consider. What's an agreement? What's an arrangement? Thanks, Alan. I think we, yeah. And you asked the more general question, forget exactly how you put it, but yes, and we're fully open to discussing joint controllership, and we have to, it's an initial report, no matter what, and we have to figure out, you know, what that initial report would mean and the implications and how exactly it would be implemented. But then also, yes, open to discussing is it true that we do have a joint controllership? But it's not it's phrased as a yes, no question, but I think, there's no easy yes, no answer, and it's not something that, you know, the people on this call can all agree together, and that doesn't mean we're right or wrong. We won't know that ultimately. Let's say we decide, no, there is no joint controllership. That's not going to stop a DPA later from saying, yes, there was, or a court later. Or we could all agree that there is a joint controllership, and somebody might challenge it later, and a court might ultimately decide that there is no joint controllership. So it's not up to us to decide ultimately. It is up to us, though, to put our heads together, not just the people on this call. It's a broader community-wide issue, and so people not on this call are going to have to agree on this too, and that's hopefully the process we'll go through with the initial report and the comments initial report, and then broader consideration by the community, and also the, you know, others have a role too. There's, you know, this will ultimately get up to the GAC, to the board, and so I don't want you to think that you're just trying to convince me. I mean, I'm here, I'm the liaison, and Trang is also on the call. We're liaisons from ICANN.org, trying to provide information and liaise, basically discuss. We can take things back, do our best to take notes, and to try to come up with, listen, bring information back, bring questions back, try to come up with answers and positions that to you. So it's not a matter of just convincing Dan and Trang, and then well done. It's a longer conversation. Thanks.
Thanks, Dan. Go ahead, Mark.
Thanks, Dan, Kurt, everybody that's spoken so far. I think this has been a really good conversation, and I think it's, you know, great when, you know, we're able to get on a call and, you know, work like this and work together in good faith towards a solution. As I'm listening to all this, you know, I'm sort of struck, you know, there's some work to be done here within the PDP, but the you know, I think there's the significant heavy lifting of actually doing the contractual arrangements and executing those arrangements, it will be done outside of the PDP. That'll be, you know, done between the contracted parties ultimately. And so, you know, what's not completely clear to me is what, you know, what we as the PDP need to provide in our policy recommendations. And certainly, you know, I think one thing we all agree on is that the contracted parties need need GDPR compliant arrangements or contracts or whatever the appropriate paper is in place between them. You know, I think we all agree that needs to be done. Like I said, you know, I think, you know, the actual execution of that, the implementation of that won't be done here in the working group. You know, that'll be done, later. And, you know, one of the things we've talked about is, you know, how that takes time, and those negotiations need to be kicked off as soon as possible. You know, not even, you know, that doesn't even necessarily need to wait for the end of this PDP. But, you know, I guess this is a little bit of an open question here is, what exactly do we think we need to put into, our report, you know, our policy recommendations at the end of this working group, that'll, you know, facilitate, enable, or otherwise, is helpful in leading to contracted parties getting into those GDPR compliant contractual arrangements.
Thanks, Mark. I think that's the right order of the conversation, the right timing of it. Go ahead, Thomas.
Thanks, Kurt. Let me just share a little observation with you. When we started this call and discussed whether or not a joint controller situation is present, we very quickly ended up in a procedural discussion on how to implement things. You know, this arrangement versus contract thing. And I think that those operational details, although they are important, should be put on the back burner for the moment. You know, even with data processing agreement where you have the text form required, you know, there is some ambiguity in terms of how this has to be executed, whether you can just tick a box or whether you just send that as an attachment to other agreements, you know. So I think we can't possibly sort out all the formal aspects on how to conclude such arrangements or agreements. I think one thing's for sure, and that is that even if there were no formal requirement for a joint controller agreement, it would be required for the parties to lay down in writing the respective roles and responsibilities. You know, so I think there's no way around that. And let's leave that to the folks that have to do the implementation later, how they're going to do that. I think we should probably issue guidance if we can on how this can be facilitated. I had suggested earlier that it could be made part of the RRA, whereby I can authorize the registries to enter into these agreements with the registrars, and then you would have these agreements agreed upon through the entire industry, you know, with least effort. At least I have not seen or come across a solution that could be easier to implement. I think to Mark's point, I think what we have to do based on our charter is to describe who does what and who's responsible for what. And that will then be mirrored in a joint control agreement. So I think that can be relatively broad brush, so we don't have to discuss every minute detail of the arrangements that need to be made. But I think that we should allocate, as we started doing, who's responsible for doing what processing activities and who is, for example, responsible for informing the data subjects about how their data is being processed. We need to determine who has to deal with rectification requests, with rights to be forgotten and all these things. I mean, we can come up with a catalog of things that we should bear in mind and then work through that catalog. But I would just like to confirm, if we can, that we are all aligned that we are going to go for the joint controller situation. And I'm saying this for the following reason. I think that whilst everyone is contemplating the initial report now, and while there might be changes to our preliminary recommendations, I think we should shoot for one option and work hard to make that option happen. And it would be unfortunate if we had reservations or open questions still in our team that could potentially be resolved now. So my plea would be that those who think that the joint controller situation is not present, please ask your questions or raise your concerns now. If you think that an alternative model is applicable, speak up now and tell us what it should be. And then maybe at the end of this call, we can, you know, if there's no objection, if there's no comment or if there are no questions, then we should, as we usually do in the GNSO, conclude that lacking objections, we have as a sub-team, as a small team, certainly not speaking on behalf of the entire EPDP team, that we have consensus on the joint controller situation being the one solution that we're all going to shoot for and work on operationalizing.
Thanks for that question, Thomas. Go ahead, Diane.
Thank you, Kurt. To follow up on that, I just want to answer Mark's question and follow up on what Thomas said, to say that inside of this PDP, I think we need to answer whether there's a joint controllership relationship or not, and on that, because ultimately, this is the base question. It takes all of our work and it sets it up to be in policies that actually could be implemented and for application, because otherwise it makes no sense. It's like in any contractual situation where you have to define the buyer and the seller, any kind of roles and responsibilities, this is what every single business goes through when they're doing a data assessment in relation to GDPR compliance and data protection compliance at all, is to set up these definitional roles, because this then lays out the scenario to describe what's going to go on with all the different processing and who's responsible for what. So this really is the baseline, and it's a factual and legal analysis. So as much as I appreciate that Dan said that we could, you know, sort of discuss it, and then it still needs to go back, and it needs to then be evaluated by this and that. To take Thomas's point further, to say that if we could just get to the place, as Alan and Dan and I had discussed, that we land on the fact that a joint controller ship exists or not within this PDP, that would be setting us up for success, and that would be able to then move on to the operational execution. And so this really needs to happen because it is based on facts and a legal analysis. And so we need to make this determination. And if we could just do that within this call, within this group, that would be success outside of this for this policy recommendation.
Thanks, Ben. Go ahead, Dan.
Good morning. Thanks again, Diane. Thomas and Mark and everybody. So I agree with Thomas's point that, you know, it's good to, I think we started out with kind of preliminary opening discussions, and we quickly jumped into the thorny implementation issues. And but I agree with the first question is, do we have a joint controllership here? And we should kind of handle things in order, and if we all agree, don't jump into implementation issues as a way it shouldn't have a direct bearing on the first legal question, is there a joint controllership? I think Thomas mentioned, let me just throw out, responding to a couple points, and I'm not trying to shift us back into implementation talk, but the idea of including the joint controller agreement as part of the RRA, which I think that's an interesting idea we should talk more about. One note is that ICANN isn't a party to those. We do approve amendments to RRAs, and maybe that would, if it somehow, if it is a joint controllership and we need to have an agreement between the parties or an arrangement between the parties, we should, we'd have to just come up if that can be handled as like an attachment to the RRA, or if it really does need to be a separate three-party agreement or whatever it is, a thousand-party agreement, because it sounds like you'd have to have each registry and ICANN and each of the registrars in that registry. But that's an implementation thing, and that's, I agree with the call to kind of get back to the first question, which is, do we have a joint controllership? And I understand Thomas and Ben are kind of looking for, can we get consensus on that small group? And that's something that I think Frank and I don't participate in consensus calls, either on the big call or on the small group. You know, we, just stepping back half a step, you know, we're not part of the consensus process. We're not part of the policy development process. Ultimately, Trang and I are part of ICANN org, and our job is to implement the decisions that you guys as the policy development team will recommend to the GNSO, that the GNSO will consider and recommend to the board, and then the board will consider, listen to the broader community, including the other advisory committees, and then the board will ultimately give its direction, and then that's what Trang and I will follow, and we don't get to make up our own minds about what we're doing here, or ultimately what the board is doing. Our job is to implement the directions of the board. And that's actually kind of what we've raised before, is that's what we're already doing. We're implementing the temporary specification, which was the decision of the ICANN board. And that's kind of our current marching orders. And that was kind of the difficulty we presented going into this. And when this first started coming up with discussions with the team about joint controllership, Trang and I kind of raised our hand and said, you know, we have to stick with the current direction we have from the board, which is what's in the temp spec. And that, you know, we pointed out that the policy development team was making, putting stuff into the recommendations that were different than what's in the temp spec. And it wasn't up to us to say, yes, we agree with that or we disagree with that. We were just pointing out, hey, that's a change. And so I think it's a change that we thought needed further discussion. I think we made that point, needs further discussion and analysis. And that's what I think we're doing here now, is going back and doing that analysis and making sure that the policy team, development team itself, has done the analysis and has come to agreement that that the team believes there is a joint controllership. And I heard the call, you know, can we get to consensus like on this small group call. And I think, I mean, it's fine, you guys can run the consensus, you know, however, you know, certain others want to do that, but you're going to have to, I mean, keep it. One thing I'm looking at the participant list, and it seems like we've got not the full cross-section of the team here. We've got IPC, at least we got the kind of the business side, and we got the registry side, we got IPC, ISP, BC. I don't see any registrars in Nepal, which I think is actually a huge issue. I mean, if we do have a joint controllership, then the registrars are part of that joint controllership too. That means that at some point we have all jointly come together, ICANN, the registries, and the registrars, and we have jointly determined the purposes and the means of processing. And we kind of raised that question, like, when exactly did that happen? Was that in 1999 that we came together and made this joint arrangement about how the parties are going to share responsibilities? Because it's not going to be that's going to happen in 2019, because we're saying that there already is a joint controllership. So that must have happened at some point in the past that the parties got together and jointly determine this process. And the registrars aren't present, and it could be that means they're all happy with what's in the initial report and they don't feel the need to discuss it, or it could just be, I don't know what it is exactly, but it'd be good to make sure that, that we're too closely what the registrars are going to think if they're on this party. And I know, NCSG has also been active on this, and I guess, and also might be that they're happy with the joint controller arrangement and didn't feel the need or weren't available to be on this call. But anyway, I just want to be cautious with that, how far we can push consensus and remind everyone that that's not something trained and I can raise their hands and say, yes, I can, org agrees. That's not our, our role to play in this, policy development process.
Thanks for that, Dan. I think part of the team's concern, our team's concern is, and the reason for this conversation is that we don't want to, develop a position on our, amongst ourselves that's, clear about, say establishing a joint controller relationship between, say, registrars and ICANN, and then have ICANN come in after the final report's issued and, say, well, we don't agree with that. Or, a situation where the board, say, is, almost, lying in wait, ready to disagree with, the conclusions of this policymaking team. And so I think, the reason for this conversation is, the first hope for result is to arrive at agreement between, the policy team and ICANN org about what the final report would say about, whether joint controller arrangements exist or, absent that, be really clear that a difference exists. And so the team is prepared for that, but, one of our goals is to not have the conversation in a vacuum, and develop some proposals later on that, ICANN or argues to the board that it's an incorrect conclusion or that, the board is ready to reject that conclusion because not only do we think that sort of denigrates our work a bit, but it all, it's also not good for the whole multi-stakeholder model. So I think what we want is to be really clear about, our reading of the law and look at the current set of facts. That's our ecosystem and situation and, develop conclusions out of that and then understand if there's a difference between, ICANN's conclusion and this policy's conclusion. So that's where I see, the risk in not having a really open conversation, potentially, even getting some feedback from the board. Go ahead, Mark. And, anybody, if I'm missing the boat here, please help me out, rest of the team. Please go ahead, Mark, you're next in the queue.
Thanks, Kurt. It's Mark. I raised my hand to respond to, Thomas's question and asking if, if we get to the end of the call and agree that we have consensus that JCA is the right approach. And, I raised my hand on that, because that's kind of, if you don't, not saying anything is consent here. And I'm not sure, I'm convinced that that's the right approach. And, let me just caveat this saying, this is not a registry stakeholder or an RYSG approach or a statement. This is something I don't think we haven't agreed upon position here. So, from my perspective, I think a JCA, may be appropriate in some situations. But I'm not convinced that is the right approach, across all of what is a very complicated, contractual and legal landscape here. A lot of the work we've done, to date is really focused on ICANN purposes. The worksheets are all talking about ICANN purposes. And in fact, I think the work that we've done, you know, does not necessarily support a JCA arrangement. And even in my read of some of the analysis that, you know, Thomas, you've done, you know, you've laid out some excellent, some excellent information, but, you know, in my, when I read those, I come to different conclusions than you do. So I'm not prepared at this point to say, I'm fully supportive of a JCA arrangement. I also want to say I'm not opposed to it either. At the end of the day, you know, I think what's important is we get into a GDPR compliant solution. And if at the end of the day, you know, it turns out that the JCA is the best way to do that, great. So I'm not opposed to it either. I'm just not convinced that the work we've done so far, lays out a compelling case that JCA is the best or only, way to accomplish that. And hopefully, you know, I think I've been pretty consistent in my interventions so far that, I think the best approach, you know, or I think it's best to leave, you know, flexibility to, the lawyers that will ultimately be implementing those contractual arrangements, to make the determination about what the right path forward is. You know, Dan's raised some interesting questions about, you know, just the logistics, how you structure those contracts when you're dealing with, thousands of contracted parties. You know, it's not an easy lift. And so, I think my interventions have been pretty consistent that I would like to see, more flexibility left to the implementers, and less specificity from us on what must be done. That's my two cents, I guess, on Thomas's question earlier.
Thanks, Mark. Thomas, go ahead.
Thanks, Kurt. And thanks, Dan and Mark, for your points. I might be too insistent, and Dan might call this cross-examination again, but let me try to explain why I'm trying to push this point. On consensus, I said earlier that our group certainly can't come to a consensus decision that is binding upon the EPDP. But we created this small team for those who have an interest in discussing this further, for those who have challenged what we had in our initial report. So I think that there's a high probability that those who think that the position, as we put it in our initial report, should be changed, take an interest in this discussion and join. So while our group is not fully representative of the entire EPDP, I think that it is with a high probability that those who have an interest in this topic are present or following these discussions. Secondly, my point about consensus is that I think from a EPDP plenary perspective, there is an expectation that our small team comes back to the plenary with recommendations. And if we can't get aligned as a small team, that's fine. Then we report convergence. Then we report divergence. But if we can, I think it would be of huge benefit to the EPDP plenary if the small team could say, well, we know that there are issues at the legal, at the operational level. We've discussed those. We came to the following conclusions and recommend to do this or that to the plenary. And this is why I'm asking, because I have a genuine interest in understanding if you, and that's not just for Dan and Mark, but for everyone on this group, if you think that what we have in our initial report is incomplete or even wrong, what shall it be? And if you don't yet know what it shall be, what can we do to provide you with the information you need to make a determination? right? I think we can't just go back to the EPDP plenary and say, well, we basically didn't make any progress other than we agree that there's more work to be done. Yes, there is more work to be done. But I think we can do better than that. I think we can try to shed light on the open issues and either resolve them or try to obtain more information or legal advice to get that sorted. So what do you need to make an informed decision? And if, Mark, if you say that you think this is not applicable to all situations, what is the distinction that you make? What scenarios do you see in the industry? Is it a very Zion 6-10 situation that you would put into different baskets? Have you, as VeriZion, conducted your own legal analysis on this? Please do share information on that so that we can either agree or disagree that we think we need to create different scenarios that need to be looked at differently. But so far, I think we haven't heard any robust counterproposal to what we have on the table, which I personally would need in order to change my mind. And Dan, I think that whilst you're perfectly correct in saying that the board needs to take a look at it, others need to take a look at it, so you can just act as an intermediary for information. This is all true. But as a privacy officer for the organization, your voice carries enormous weight. We've recently read in ICANN's letters that ICANN.org thinks that the GDPR is directly applicable to ICANN.org. And so you might be asked tomorrow whether you want to officially take the position of the data protection officer under GDPR. And that would go along with the personal liability to get things right. So I think that, you know, whatever suggestion you make internally or externally, you know, this is a JCA situation or this is something different, it will be heard. It will be put into the equation when decisions are made. So I think that, you know, there is a genuine interest that we all have in your perspective on this. And whilst it might not be binding, I think it would be hugely beneficial for us to learn more about what you think the direction is that this group and our final report should take. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Thomas. And I, you know, half of me thinks that we need to go back, you know, to the workbooks to look at all the processing steps, and half of me thinks, you know, it's more straightforward that, and we look at the relationships and say, you know, if there aren't joint controllers, then who's the controller and who's the process? You know, what are the alternatives to the joint controller arrangements? Christina, go ahead.
Hi, Christina Rosette, Registry Stakeholder Group. Apologies for A, joining late, and B, just getting on to Adobe. I fully support Thomas's many points that he just made, but in particular, the point that he made about this being a small group that is working through the issues and is going to take it back to the larger group. And I guess I have a question for Dan, and that is, does that allay the concerns that you've expressed about the fact that there are not an NCSG or RRSG representative on this call? Because if the answer is no, I'm not sure it's a productive use of anyone on this call's time to spend the next 38 minutes discussing this or however much longer it is. Instead, what I would suggest is if Dan, if you feel that the absence of those folks, those representatives, is critical, I'd suggest we identify what our respective to-do lists are and go back and schedule another call that's got those folks on it. Thanks.
Thanks, Christina. I'm following through on the call to get as much wisdom and positions and detail on the table as we can, since we've invested this much time already, but we'll see how far we get. Go ahead, Dan.
Thanks, Kurt and Christina. Now, there's working backwards there, I don't know. I haven't thought through. I just raised the point that, you know, it's fine to ask for a consensus of this small team, but that's only as good as it is because it's only the small team participants, which is even, you know, Trang and I are on the small team participating in that consensus call. I think it's fine if you guys want to say, you know, express the views of this small team. I don't know exactly how the small team was founded. I know, I'm sure everybody had an opportunity to join. I think we were on a call once and, you know, it was probably a month ago. And I don't know whether, like, the invitation for this call just went out to this small group and how exactly it was made up. So I don't think it's a big, you know, consideration to stop us from discussing it. I think we probably have the people who are interested are here, or the people who are available. I don't think it needs to stop us from discussing it. And even from expressing the views of the people who are here, mostly I was just missing the perspective of a registrar. I mean, let's think of if you're a medium or small registrar and we're telling you you have to enter a joint controller agreement with every registry. Maybe you're a registrar and you support, I don't know if there are any that support hundreds or 500 different CODs. That means, surprise, your legal team is now going to be in negotiations with 500 different registries, trying to come up with, appropriate joint controller agreement. You're going to be negotiating indemnification, responsibilities. It could vary across different CODs. How are you as a registrar going to implement having, you know, 500 different arrangements for your roles and responsibilities and your liability? Because it could vary for TLD. So I was missing that perspective and not saying that, you know, that this isn't a legitimate conversation that we can go forward with. I just wish it was at least a little bit broader so we could get that view in. Going back, you know, I understand that there's that interest in Thomas is pointing out that have the role of Chief Data Protection Officer within ICANN.org. And I just would note that I don't think anything has officially changed on that. I'm still ICANN Chief Data Protection Officer. When we announced that position probably over a year ago now, that was intended to be it was from the very beginning and in all the announcements, that's an ICANN.org focused role, it's an internally focused role. So I work with all the different teams. You know, we have human resources and finance and travel support and all kinds of different stuff going on within ICANN that has nothing to do directly with, you know, domain registration, registries, registrars, WIS data, and that's been my focus in that role. I'm also still on the legal team, and in that role, in my main role as Deputy General Counsel, I report to John Jeffrey. So I also support the GDD team and registries and registrars. So I'm kind of sitting here with more of that responsibility of, you know, working with ICANN and the supporting ICANN and its relationships with registries and registrars, and also support the policy team. So I'm more on that side of it. I'm not here to give opinions as data protection officer for ICANN formally. And I heard Thomas, you know, the point about the ICANN letter saying that GDPR is directly applicable to ICANN, and maybe that it's always worth taking a look at, and we're always keeping an eye on that, whether ICANN does need to appoint a data protection officer under GDPR, which another thing to clarify is I am not that. ICANN has not designated me as the data protection officer under GDPR. In fact, our analysis has been that we're not required under GDPR to appoint a data protection officer. And we've actually, based on questions, I think we have a posted FAQ on that if people want to dig into it more, but maybe that's kind of a I don't want to sidetrack us too much on this discussion. I heard the call for, you know, that we need something else on the table. I think someone used the word robust counterproposal, and I think that's fair. And I think we've been on the ICANN.org side thinking through what else can we bring to the table. And I think we're trying to work on another, like a further follow-on memo from what we sent out a few weeks ago when we were just basically responding to the initial report and raising questions about what was in the initial report. And I think we'll try and come up with a an alternative counterproposal. Again, not pushing it. This is not adversarial. It's just how would this look exactly if the parties weren't joint controllers kind of across the board, which is how I understand the initial report has us. There might be places where for certain purposes at least, or for all purposes, at some point we're going to be independent controllers. And how would that work and what would be required in that case? And so we'll try and put that proposal on the table in writing for this team or the broader group to get a look at and try to understand. And going further back to Mark's points, and he was raising about, you know, that maybe that, as, you know, registry rep, he's not 100% there yet either, that we do have, you know, an across-the-board, industry-wide joint controllership, and it might be kind of more complicated and more nuanced. And I do think it would be good to talk more, not to put Mark on the spot about FinTech, but that I think that does raise, you know, an interesting issue, which is if you have a registry that's still thin, is that the same kind of joint controllership you have? I think when we're talking about the joint controllership, probably what's foremost in people's minds is maybe the new gTLD scenario or the thick TLD scenario where you have lots of registrant data flowing between the registry and the registrar, and they're both holding it, they're both processing that data. What about a case where a registry is just a thin registry? It's only, you know, basically processing the thin technical data, let's call it. It knows, okay, here's a registrar, and it, here's all its name servers that it's, here's all the domains it wants registered, and here's the associated name servers, and the, you know, the IP addresses for those name servers, and that's it. They don't know anything about the registrant. Are they also joint controllers in that case? And so I think we need to go back and look exactly at what does joint controllership mean, just to bring us all the way back to what exactly does joint controllership mean. Let's look at the GDPR. Let's look at the Irish flavor of that that Alan gave the link to, and decide based on what the team has done so far with, you know, here's all the different purposes, I think this has been the main focus. What exactly are the processing activities? Who's responsible for each of those? What's their role in those activities? And what's, you know, what's ICANN's role? What's the registry's role? What's the registrar's role? And does that mean you have a joint controllership there? I think, you know, the point was raised that all we've looked at so far is what are ICANN purposes? I'm not 100%, not clicking for me what exactly that means. If you have a joint controllership, shouldn't we also be talking about registry and registrar purposes and what those are and how are they joint? I think I've heard, Preston, you know, earlier with the bigger team, some registrars think, you know, some of these things are entirely ICANN's doing, that, you know, they wouldn't do this processing but for ICANN. They have no interest in it. They have no role in it. They would not do that if it wasn't a requirement in our contract. Does that mean it's a joint controllership agreement? Because if it's a joint controllership agreement, the parties are supposed to get together and mutually decide, I think, on what the purposes and the means of processing are going to be. If you got a situation where one party is dictating to another party, hey, you know, you can sign this contract and do this, take on this role of being registered registrar, but you must do these 10 things, does that fall under joint controllership? Or I think some of the examples we looked at in that the initial memo, you know, there's that the travel agency, you got travel agents, you got airlines, you got airports, they're sharing data. You can look at them either in some cases they could be independent controllers, in some cases they're joint controllers. Okay, I think I'm kind of rambling on too far and in the back with you, but thanks for all those comments, everybody.
Well, thanks, Dan. Alan, I think there was a segue for you in towards the end of Dan's speech about ICANN purposes and registrar purposes. But anyway, go ahead with what you were going to say.
Thank you. There was an awful lot in that. I'm sorry. I'm trying to like parse into my brain. There's a few key points. I mean, so at the beginning of what you were saying there, you were talking about, you know, and again, this is something that I think Thomas and Diane were trying to steer away from, and that is, again, this concept that it's going to be so difficult to do, you know, 500 separate TLD agreements with, you know, individual registrars. I just don't see how that's possibly going to change if you change it into a DPA, because it'd probably be worse, because you probably have to do a joint controller agreement and a data processing agreement. And you know, that's the whole point about the Article 26, is that, you know, this was the reason behind the creation of this enhanced joint controller agreement, because the EU, way back, even when the 95 directive came out, they went, hey, the world moved on faster than we are able to legislate for. So it's an exception that the cookie cutter agreement processor controller arrangement does not work, especially when you bring into account the multinational, extraterritorial, extra EU aspects
of the internet. And so that is what Article 26 is. It's saying, look, if you think that there is a joint controllership, that there is a sharing of the responsibility, the sharing at some point where you believe that the data being collected is being used for a united purpose, a shared purpose, then that must be put down into an agreement between the parties. And if there are areas where it is more of a processor relationship, well, then that must be taken into account within the actual data processing agreement versus the joint control agreement itself. You're basically creating a map that is unique to you and to your industry. And it is the easier option here because, again, as Diane is pointing out quite rightly, factually, the legal facts and the legal way and the facts and how we process data, in some instances, we are joint controllers. In some instances, we are probably more processors. And, you know, a good example of that would be obviously the RDDS and the who is. You know, we would not publish that unless we were probably made to do it is one of the ways that we would look at that. But again, it's part of our contract. It's suggested we're told that we must do it, so we do it. So in that instance, we'd be more a processor controller. And that is something that we would put into the specifics of the joint controller agreement. I think also you mentioned there at the end about this, again, this concept of this independent controller. That's not really where the EPDP is going, because if ICANN were an independent controller and anything to do with it, I don't understand. Are you saying that it's just a controller and us as your independent processors as well? That's just a normal arrangement. It's not, it's a term of art. It's creating nothing new. So, you know, an independent controller, ICANN.org has signed the contracts with registries and registrars. Therefore, the only purposes that we should be dealing with here are the shared purposes. ICANN's own purposes and how they deal with that is not a matter on the table for us. We are talking about how we, as a contracted party, as an ICANN and the registry, ICANN and the registrars, how we are dealing with it. And we can only have shared purposes in that. We do not have independent, our own purposes. If we have our independent and own purposes, take for instance, I would say, you know, donuts. Okay, we have DPML. You know, that is our own thing. It is separately our own thing, and we must act as the controller in that because it's not something that's in the contracts with ICANN, technically as well. I'm giving it as a really bad example, but it is an example. So I just want us to be really, really clear on what we're doing here. You know, we're talking again and going back to implementation. At the moment, the most prudent, the simplest, the one that represents most of the facts within this is the joint controller agreement, because it allows all the parties the leeway to do what we need to do, and that is to define the processing that we undertake as a contracted party on behalf of ICANN or with ICANN in one document between the parties. Again, implementation is going to be difficult. It is going to be a nightmare. It's going to take a lot of time. But we shouldn't be discussing this, you know, high-level sort of what-if situation. And, I mean, I'll go back. We must talk within the registry stakeholder group about this because there are some issues. And I fully appreciate the stance from the thin registry in that because, you know, there is a difference in it because they don't have the data that to process and they don't have the same considerations that we would have at this particular moment in time. But, again, you know, I'm not well up on what's happening there at the moment. But, of course, we must look to the future for – Are they not going to go thick? Is that one of the things? And if they are going to go thick, well, then they definitely have a poker in that particular fire as well. So we need to be careful. We will get clarity from the registry stakeholder group. We need to get clarity in that. We will do that. But at the same time, can we focus on, you know, at the moment, the JCA, the Article 26 is on the table as being a viable alternative for everything. And even today, now I've not heard one other suggestion that would potentially make me change my mind on that, because we need a viable alternative, as Diane said, in the chat. Dan, I appreciate that you're coming up with another suggestion on that, but I mean, time is ticking down so quickly on this, and we need to know this sooner rather than later. And I mean, you're saying that it's more of a, you know, potential. At this moment, we have a viable option on the table, and we can't work on bodies at the moment. We need to start moving forward quickly in this. We're already at Christmas. We don't have much time left. And I'm sorry, I just really urge us to, you know, commit already for the end of the term, and we need to get this done.
So, Alan, when you say, you know, we're already at this stage in the calendar,
what do you think we need to have settled as the as our EPDP group, and what will be left to later? So what level of detail do we need to go and settle for our final report?
Yeah, so I mean that is a hard one. I mean, I think personally, as a recommendation, as we've made so far, and that is that we have a that we direct ICANN to enter into a joint control agreement or start the negotiation with that. I mean, that is our key recommendation that we can make as a team, where we believe that this is the route to go. When it comes down to it, I think the EPDP team can certainly help with identifying, you know, certain elements of that. But, you know, at the end of the day, I think our job is done with the EPDP team if we can say this is the route that we need to get compliance with the law. This is what we're directing you to do. And I mean, this was one of the recommendations that was made way back in LA, where we said, you know, start the contract negotiation process now, because that is where the next step of that will take. And we know that that's going to take more than a year, but at least it's a step in the right direction in getting these recommendations in place. So I don't know how other, you know, stakeholder groups and organizations would think about this, but I think as far as we can put it, we are directing that this is a legal instrument that needs to be put in place, and that is the recommendation of the team, as is already in the interim report. And I would be very interested to see the comments that come through based on that recommendation alone. And I think that is where, as far as we can push it.
Thanks, Alan. Go ahead, Dan.
Thanks, Kurt. Thanks, Alan. And I'm sorry, I'm just taking advantage. There's no one else putting their hand up, and I'll talk. I'll try not to give another big speech. Sorry about that. I'm having trouble with regulating the duration of my comments. It's kind of early on Monday morning here. I saw in the Adobe Connect to welcome Farzi and Lindsay and others. That was kind of magic. We were just discussing. It'd be better to have more perspectives here. So it's great that you joined. And also want to, you know, give any time on the mic to anybody else who wants to speak. I think, Alan, you make a really good case, and it's well argued. I think we're all on the same page. It's, you're making a good case. I think maybe see the clock a little bit differently. You know, we've pointed out that the initial, ICANN or cookbook, stated that, that was Alan's loud sigh. You should probably go on mute before you sigh at my comments. So the cookbook said that the part that ICANN Org's interpretation was that the parties were independent controllers and agreed, you know, going to try and get out more detail on what exactly that means and how we saw it. And I agree with Thomas and others who pointed out that there wasn't a lot of analysis behind that in the cookbook. And then the temp spec came out, and it just said, here's the parties and they're all controllers. It didn't say joint controllers. It didn't say independent controllers. It didn't say joint controllers. It just said controllers. And now the EPDP team has come in and said, in the initial report, that there's a joint controllership here. And I think what our concern was that there wasn't a lot of analysis there. I think we are doing more analysis now. And I think what we've heard is that, you know, some or many believe that what was laid out in the workbooks, the worksheets, basically, that was the analysis that supported the finding of joint controllership. I think we'll come back with, you know, trying to lay out the case. What exactly does it mean if you know, let's say the registrar is a controller. I think everybody agrees nowadays. I believe that registrars are controllers. They collect data from data subjects. They operate servers and backups, and they connect with registries, they process it, they do marketing, they do billing, they do all kinds of stuff with that data. They're determining the means and the purposes. They might be jointly determining it with others, but they are controllers. I think going back a year or two when we first started these discussions, many registrars thought they weren't controllers. They were just processors, and that somehow ICANN was the main control in all this, and the registrar was just a processor. There might still be registrars who think they are just processors, and they're not controllers. And if that's true, then there's not a joint controllership, because then a registrar is just a processor, not a controller. So I think if we all agree that registrars are controllers, then you got to ask, is the registry a controller? And and that might vary. I think one example we've tossed out there in previous writings is, what about a dot brand in Japan? Is it a controller? It might only have two domains in its whole TLD, and they both say that they're registered to the corporation with generic corporate registration information. It has absolutely zero personal data on any European data subject. How are we going to say that registry is a controller? I think we'd have trouble making that argument. We kind of raised these issues, like, how would we implement this exactly? You know, what if some registry pushes back and says, I'm not going to sign the joint control agreement. I don't have any personal data of European data subjects. Go away, ICANN. And I think the response we got back was, well, that would be a compliance issue. In other words, ICANN contractual compliance would have to follow up with that registry and say, hey, Japanese dot brand registry, you're in breach of this consensus policy that says that ICANN and you are joint controllers of this data. You have to sign this joint controller agreement, you're in breach. I think it would put us in a really strange place where we would want to be and don't want to go. And I think that goes back to a need for the EPDP team to focus on the one thing that is in its control right now is, what is the policy recommendation? And, you know, the policy recommendation should say exactly who must do what. Right now it's written, I don't know exactly how clear it is, that ICANN.org must enter a joint controller agreement. It doesn't have, I think, the level of detail about that it's one per TLD, so we have to enter a separate joint control agreement. I think so that would be my recommendation, is to focus on what is in the EPDP team's control, which is basically one paragraph of the, what will ultimately be the final report. So what is the EPDP team going to recommend that the policy should be? And that policy, you guys have in your hands the ability to make obligations, recommendations on obligations that will be binding on ICANN.org and will be binding on registries and registrars through the magic of consensus policies. So I think the team should focus on, however it's decided, joint controllers or not, or independent controllers, here's what registries must do, here's what registrars must do, here's what ICANN must do. And that's my comment. Thanks.
Alan, go ahead.
Thank you. I need to preface this by saying, I'm not getting out. I appreciate, Dan, you are there. We're putting you in a difficult position at times as well. So I apologize if I come across as strong. But I just wanted to get back on two of the points there, I suppose. So with the dot brand in Japan, I mean, Your point is definitely, from an implementation point, an interesting one. However, again, this is part and parcel of this is why we're saying a joint controller agreement makes sense, just purely because within the joint controller agreement, we will be able to say, if you are a brand registry in which you don't actually process data, well, then in that instance, you would not be liable to the same extent as a registry who does process personal data, you know, not saying that they don't. Another thing with that as well is, of course, and this is something that has been told to us for the last 2 or 3 years with regards to, you know, why we are controllers in this, and it keeps coming back to this, is that, well, we're part of the ICANN community, and don't you have a say as part of the ICANN community in this? In a way, I mean, I think that is the weakest form of controllership, but at the same time, you know, there are people who do genuinely believe that because we participate in the community process, that we are controlling what is being done with that. And I mean, we've heard it yourselves, you know, where you're saying that you're just literally signing what the community tells you to do. But, you know, again, you have a role to play because it's up to you to decide whether or not you disagree with the role or not. But anyway, that's beside the point. So, again, the community aspect of it. And then and another thing, and this is something that I think that Thomas pointed out in one of his emails previously as well. I mean, I understand what was in the cookbook. I understand what was in the Calzone model. But at the same time, when we looking at the document that you sent through to us, I mean, you said that, you know, there was at least two legal opinions which said there are joint controllers here. And yet, ultimately, at the end of the day, ICANN still chose not to go with that. And that I still don't understand as well. You know, as in what changed between those two legal opinions and the Calzone, or, well, whatever it is now, missing out in food stuff. But, you know, what changed that made ICANN do a 1A and decide that it wasn't a joint controller, even though that was the prevailing legal opinion on that? So, I mean, there's a lot of questions there. I become less clear on where the argument is, unfortunately.
Thanks, Alan. So,
I'm here in a bit. So Thomas, go ahead, Aya.
Thanks, Kurt. Just to take further Alan's point, I think that we're to the juncture where we've all expressed our different viewpoints, and there are certain of us that feel that we're to the point of seeing that there's a joint controllership relationship and the bent of the joint control agreement. And I think that now, as we started this conversation, as Thomas pointed out, and as I did, that we need to better understand any alternative situations that exist, perhaps by getting more thoughts and insights from Mark, from Dan, on if there's pushback on the joint control relationship, to understand what it would look like, how it would work otherwise. Because as Alan pointed out, it would be very difficult from an implementation standpoint and to reach compliance for there to be small and large parties out there that can't contractually be responsible or less responsible and have that proportionate relationship that's needed. So in the example where, in fact, there is an entity that isn't processing personal data, then the joint controllership agreement can be able to provide for those complexities, whereas independent controllership relationships and sub-relationships are very difficult to track, and there would be a big compliance hole. So I think that there needs to be a greater understanding, and the outcome of this call would be, you know, much enhanced if we could have more insights into what possibly other constructions could look like, so that we could see how those are possibly applied under the law. Thank you.
Thanks, Diane. I've lost sight of the queue. Is anybody in the queue?
Hey, Kurt, it's me. It's Dan. I'm in
the
queue.
Go ahead, Dan.
Just a quick thing to respond to both Alan and Diane, that I hear you. I agree. We'll take this back as a homework assignment to come back with in writing to the whole group or to the whole team, I guess, with more detail on what would it mean, what's the alternative really, and how is it justified, and to go back, I hear you, to give some, state the rationale for it, too, and how, we put the opinions of the, where the Article 29 Working Party, I think it was, said at first glance it looks like a joint controller agreement, and the Hamilton memo basically said that joint controllership might be a workable way to attack this, and it's true that I can't or didn't take on board those first glances or that suggestion in the Calzone. We're going way back in history now. But I think anyway, we'll put more on the table right now about the what the alternative would look like and what's the rationale for it and how it would look at implementation. So thanks for that.
I have a question. I think it might be for Thomas, but it could be for anybody. So I'm thinking about the final report, what that looks like, and I'm picturing Appendix C in the temporary specification where it indicated for each processing step, who was a controller, who was a processor. Is our work amending that chart, or is our work going to really point to the purposes outlined in the workbooks and define processors or controllers and joint controllers that way? Sort of a corollary question is the temporary spec identifies two controllers for the same processing step but doesn't identify them as joint controllers. Is that possible? So, Thomas, what do we have to get to as far as level of detail in describing where joint controller arrangements exist and where they don't?
Thanks, Kurt. I think we've pretty much laid the foundation for what we have to say in our final report in the initial report, and that is where you have multiple parties or let me put it differently. The way I would envisage this at the moment is that we would establish that ICANN registries and registrars are joint controllers. We would then specify, as we did in the workbooks, who the responsible party for the respective processing activity would be. And that is basically something that could be amended in the table you find in the temporary specification. You know, it would be a change of language from controller processor to who is the responsible party, so that within the joint controller scenario, we would identify the party or the parties that are responsible for certain things. I mentioned this in my first intervention during this call. So we would say which party is responsible for disclosing data, which party is responsible for doing the audits. You know, that would be ICANN.org for sure. And, you know, that's something that could then be mirrored in a joint controller agreement where, you know, we stipulate that, or those who have to implement stipulate that ICANN.org will request data from the contracted parties. The contracted parties will pass it on, but then ICANN.org will make sure that all this is being done in a compliant fashion. So that would be the internal works, but then also we have the joint controllers outsourcing activities to third parties. At least that's our current state of play. So we would have escrow agents and the bureaus acting as processors, yet only ICANN.org is identifying, laying out contractual parameters for the engagement of and monitoring the work of the escrow agents and the bureaus. So the joint controllers would then authorize ICANN.org to enter into agreements, data processing agreements, that is, with the escrow agents and the bureaus and potentially more third parties to do their job. You know, so I think we can reflect all that in policy recommendations by, you know, making minor tweaks to the existing language in the temp spec. I hope this answers your question, Kurt.
So I want to bring the call to a close because this is the time we have a lot, and I think we've all said our piece. I just want to check, is that I'm not seeing the queue. I'm not in the Adobe Connect room. Is anybody in the queue? So I think the way the next step there would be to do a pro forma form or input like that, Thomas, that we would write up what that would look like, what the amendment to the temp spec would look like, and then we could have our EPDP team discussion. For example, Mark thought he wasn't sure of all the instances where a joint controllership might exist or might not. And so we could have our own discussion, and then that would be a tool that we could lay side by side with whatever ICANN proposes. So I think we kind of laid out positions on the call, but the next step is to, you know, look at that level of detail, you know, at the right level of detail with each one of those steps. Does that make sense to you? So again, I'm not in the Adobe Connect room, so if anybody wants to talk, that'd be great.
Hi, Marika, this is Julie. We're having trouble hearing you if you were talking.
Yeah, Dan, I don't see Marika. Dan, I don't see in the room talking. Oh yeah, I did. I talked to her.
she had
oh, well, I got the mic. Can I just say thanks to Kurt for running this, and Thomas and Mark, everyone who's spoken up. Thanks very much for the conversation, and look forward to further cooperative discussion to get to closure on this. Thank you very much.
No, can you guys hear me? Okay, so Thomas, does that make sense to you what I proposed?
I guess so, Kurt. Yeah.
All right. All right. Let me. I'll try to. I'll work with the support team to try to summarize what we discussed and send that out in an email. And obviously, we're going to have to get together again. So, thanks very much, everyone, for getting on the call, and we'll be talking soon. So long.
Thanks, bye. Thanks,
everyone. Today's meeting's adjourned. Have a good rest of your day.